Did you inherit $1 million from your grandparent, or are you about to become wealthy from someone else's hard work? If you say yes to these questions, this show is not for you. You, the hardworking, committed, and ambitious professional who have a 9-to-5 corporate job or a 12-hour shift worker keeping the assembly line running. Perhaps you run your gig as a freelancer, or maybe you run a small business. You are in the right place. Welcome to the Career Evangelist Podcast, where you get your weekly tips, ideas, strategies, and inspiration to find purpose in what you do so you can build a career you are passionate about and live a fulfilled life. Here is your host, Bola Alabi.
Welcome to the Career Evangelist Podcast. I'm excited about today's show because I have another awesome guest with us. We have John Tenoff, a leading career transition coach who has dedicated his expertise to guiding individuals through their intricate maze of career changes. John has a unique blend of insight from his own journey and years of professional experience. So John is here with us today to share invaluable advice on career transition with confidence and clarity. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks so much for having me on, Bola. Great to be here.
Awesome. So let me just go straight to it. Why do you do career coaching? Why is that important to you?
Great question. So my background is not the usual career coach background. A lot of people in this field come out of HR, that's not me at all. I come out of business and industry as essentially a project manager in the entertainment industry, where I was a film studio executive for many years, also worked on my own as a producer, did a kind of a detour into technology in the 1990s, had a tech startup with a partner and raised a bunch of money and kind of rode that up during the bubble. And then when the bubble burst in 2001, we burst with it. And I had to kind of pick up the pieces of this company and figure out where I wanted to go. And this is kind of a bit of a roundabout way of answering your question, but I think it goes to the fact that my career focus, which is on mid-career, people who are in the, you know, mid to late 40s, into their 50s, sometimes into their 60s, are really wrestling with a dilemma about what they're going to do essentially now that they've learned how to be professionals and they have accumulated a set of skills and experiences that make them competent and knowledgeable in their field. But in midlife, we kind of get this sense of, okay, so what's next? What is my purpose? What is my destiny? And for many people, very importantly, what is my legacy? What am I going to leave behind? What are my family, my friends, what are they going to say about me when I'm gone? What do I feel like I've actually accomplished here? So this was coming up for me. And I thought, well, this is a important juncture in my life. And I decided to go back to school to earn an advanced degree at age 50. And I chose to pursue a psychology degree, a counseling-oriented psychology degree, not so much because I wanted to become a counselor or a coach or a psychologist at that time, but because I really wanted to learn more about me and what made me tick and how I was engaging with people and how I could perhaps do a better job of that. That ironically brought me back into work in the entertainment industry at a studio as a studio executive, but I was doing people-oriented work and team development and program development, and it was a very different opportunity for me. But I really enjoyed it, and I thought, well, this is really defining the direction that I want to go in. So when I left this company, which is a DreamWorks Animation, a fantastic company, around 2010, I decided I was going to go into this kind of a field, consulting and working on careers. And so I've been career coaching now formally since 2012. I did a TEDx talk, which was kind of the pivot point for me, where I developed this initial methodology and framework that I use to coach people. And I've been working with mid-career professionals ever since, helping them transition into better careers and land better jobs.
Okay, that's awesome. I like the way you put it about midlife, and often I hear about midlife crisis, and I think you are in that space to rescue people, to help people discover their purpose and maybe find their passion again. And I think that is important. But I want to ask you, why midlife, mid-career professionals? Why not maybe the new entrants into the career world? Why are the people in their mid-career, why is that so important to you?
Right. I think it's because it really reflects my own experience. And, you know, there's an old saying that we want to teach what we want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a very important transition for me in my 50s to make this move and to learn about the opportunities inside myself to pursue a more rewarding, more meaningful career. And I'm inspired to share this skill set with other people who are facing the same kind of obstacle. And I would say that the difference between pursuing a career transition in mid-career versus pursuing a career transition early on in career is that there's a different set of criteria for people who are in midlife. And we have some obstacles which do not really occur in the same way for younger professionals. Number one is ageism. And this is a very terrible big problem. It is the last accepted bias that occurs in our culture. And we are very unconscious about the effect of ageism. We think that, well, of course, old people decline and lose their minds and get senile and don't have the physical stamina to do their jobs, and they should go off and retire, and we don't want to hear from them anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, this is an outdated concept, and we are all living longer. There is the opportunity to live a much healthier life for a longer period of time, and our business culture is slowly adjusting to this new reality. So one point to make about this is that if the traditional view of life and career was you spent your first part of your life getting a good education, that education qualified you to work in your career for 40 years, and then in your 60s, you got to retire and live out the rest of your life in leisure. Well, the economics don't really work along that line anymore. In the U.S., a majority of people approaching or at retirement age can't really afford to spend what is going to be probably around 20, maybe 30 years in retirement. Economics are fluctuating. We see we're in a very volatile global economy. So even if you feel that you've saved up a good amount of money for your retirement, I would challenge most people to really predict how well they can manage that savings for 20 or 30 years. Most of us will have to pursue our career in one way or another.
Right.
And there is data pointing to the idea that we are moving from a 40-year career to a 60-year career. But it is not going to be 60 years of going to the office every day from 9 to 5 and doing that same thing all the time. It's going to be a much more diverse experience where you will spend part of your time perhaps working for a company as you get into your career. Then maybe you'll have a period of time to go back to school, learn new skills. Maybe you'll have a period of freelance or consulting work. Maybe you'll get into teaching or education. Maybe you'll come back into your industry in a more senior capacity as a mentor, as a strategist. So there are all of these different ways of looking at career now that are no longer part of this industrial model that we are working to evolve out of because we are in a post-industrial era. So let's start thinking more differently about how we can all, of every generation, make a contribution.
Oh, I like the way you frame that. And I think it's absolutely true. The career world is changing. People, they have to stay flexible and adapt as they continue in this career journey. Now, I want to challenge you a little bit on some of your contrarian position. I know you.
Oh, good. Bring it on.
You have so many of these. You said don't follow your passion. Instead, we should find our usefulness.
Yes, yes.
You said confidence comes last.
Yes.
Waiting for it. For me, yes. I am thinking that confidence is the first thing in everything that you want to do. That with that confidence, you can jump in and, you know, scale the mountain. So what do you mean by confidence comes last?
I'm really glad you asked me this question. because, and it, a lot of the times I work with people and they say, well, when I feel more confident, I will take steps to get coached, to apply for another job, to go back to school, to do whatever I'm going to do. And this idea that we have to wait for the confidence to happen before we take the step, that keeps us stuck.
Yeah.
And for many people, making a transition is hard. Change is hard. Change is hard for everybody, right? It's ironic that as human beings, our greatest success, personally, professionally, in life, in business, comes from challenge.
Yeah.
You know, we never grow by sitting at home on the couch and watching TV.
No.
Right? It is the challenge that forces us to deal with our obstacles. And in dealing with the obstacles, we become stronger and more competent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So confidence is something that we use as this ideal, this obstacle. And yes, of course, when you feel confident, you feel capable of addressing all of these challenges. But I would say that most of the time, when it comes to addressing change and making a change in our lives, we're scared on some level. We're either scared about it because we're uncertain, it's new, it's unfamiliar, it's uncomfortable. So by saying confidence comes last, I want to help people understand that they don't need to be confident to make a move, to take a step, that you can understand that this is valuable, it's important, you need to do it, and you can do it, even if you don't feel confident. When you do it, you will feel like, oh, I got through. It was difficult, but here I am. I've learned a lesson. It may not have turned out exactly the way I thought it was going to turn out, but I can see that in most ways, it's for the best, and I feel stronger and more confident because I've been through it, and I know that I can do it. So that's why the confidence comes last.
Okay, I get it. You also said that resume don't get people hired.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we live in a world where the hiring and recruiting process is largely broken. And this is because recruiters and hiring managers are overwhelmed by applicants. Mm-hmm. And there's just a tremendous amount of confusion around how to fill a position. And there's a lot more volatility in the market. Jobs are not as secure as they once were.
Yeah.
People are having to change up their staffing requirements, their skills requirements. It's a challenging environment if you are trying to staff a company. So as a candidate, it is easier to get lost in the shuffle. the conventional wisdom is that the average recruiter or hiring manager spends 7 seconds skimming a resume, right?
Yeah.
So I would, on that basis, suggest that people not put so much emphasis on the value of their resume, because it's going to get tossed around, it's going to get thrown out, it's going to get ignored. And submitting a resume no longer means that you're going to get a fair consideration. It no longer means that you're going to get a job interview invitation. Mm-hmm. We live in a digital era. LinkedIn, for all of the criticism of the platform, I would contend, is your new resume. Yeah. It is the first place that people go when they, in the professional recruiting world, it's the first place they go when they hear your name or when someone refers you to a company. It is the number one place that recruiters go to source talent. Mm-hmm. So your first priority as a job candidate is to make sure that your LinkedIn profile is fully filled out and expresses as best you can the value that you deliver through your work.
Okay. Now, I appreciate that comment. You are encouraging people to leverage their resume profile to get their next role or for whatever job candidates out there. Mm-hmm. Talked about having an updated profile. You said the candidate should also display their value on LinkedIn. Now, I want to ask, how can job candidates position themselves through LinkedIn as the choice candidate for potential employer?
Yeah. So this gets into my system. So this is a kind of a perfect opportunity for me to kind of share my philosophy about how to get hired and how to, as you were referencing at the beginning of the conversation, this idea that if you follow this system, you never have to search for a job again.
Okay, I like that.
Right? Yeah. And that may seem like a kind of a wild idea, mm-hmm. but here's how it works.
Okay.
And the answer to your question is that employers are looking for specific solutions. They are not looking for generalists. And I find this unfortunate because I think generalists who bring a broad range of interests and experiences to the table have a lot to offer on the job because they have different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
However, I understand that in an organization, a hiring manager company wants to apply someone's skills to solve a specific problem, and that each job opening relates to a specific area. It's a specific function on a team. It's a specific goal that that team or company wants to achieve. Great, I get it. So in your profile,
mm-hmm.
and this kind of goes back to this idea of passion that you were alluding to before, you want to define what I call the superpower, that mosaic collection, portfolio of skills, experiences, philosophies, values that you represent that can move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do best? What do you love to do? What do you have experience doing that you can point to as evidence that you can do it again? And where do you want to go? What's your ambition? And if you can create those touch points in your profile, that gets you in the game. That gets you noticed because it's very specific. Now, not everyone is going to respond to this, but the old marketing adage is, if your product is for everyone, your product is actually for no one, right?
Yeah.
So you want to narrow down that superpower to get the attention of the people who really can use it. And then the second step in this is to network. It is your network that's going to bring the opportunities to you. Mm-hmm. And within your network, you want to build a community of shared interests. The top people that you know, whom you know, who can actually understand what you deliver and help you market what you deliver. If you have a very well-defined value proposition or superpower on your profile, it makes it easy to refer you. It makes it easy for your friends and colleagues to say, oh, Bola does this very specifically. Ah, now I know who I can refer him to.
Okay, so we should showcase our superpower on LinkedIn. That's what you're saying.
Superpowers, number one. Mm-hmm. Build a community, number two, of shared interests. And the number three element that I advocate is for people to become thought leaders. And what that means is that we all have to stand up for what we stand for. Mm-hmm. We all have opinions about our business, what we do, what works, what the best practices are. And particularly at mid-career, you have a lot of experience. You have a lot of knowledge, right? It's time to share that knowledge and build up the perception of you as a subject matter expert in your field. Absolutely. And this allows you to comment on LinkedIn, to post information, to share articles and make introductions to people so that in your networking and community building effort, you're spending 80% of your time giving information to people in your industry, mm-hmm. and only 20% of your time asking for favors.
Okay.
So that you become perceived as this giver of information, this subject matter expert. And this becomes a flywheel between defining your superpower, building your community, and engaging as a thought leader.
Yeah.
You create this flow of information, dialogue, expression, community building, where you're talking about, in a way, everything about your business except getting a job. But guess what? People will think of you when they're looking to fill a position, and you come pre-qualified because people have built up this trust in your authority and your expertise because of the time you have spent cultivating your network and your community, sharing your expertise. And it's not just online. You can do this and should do this offline. Industry associations, get involved in events, conferences, teach, run programs to build community and to volunteer within your industry. So anything you can do to elevate your profile helps keep you top of mind. And that's why there will be a constant flow of opportunity coming your way. Hey, are you interested? Hey, you should check out this company. You know, hey, I want to introduce you to someone at this other company who might be someone interesting to you. You know, you do this, you should talk to that person. They can help you or you can help them.
Okay.
So the job comes out of the network and that activity.
That's awesome. Speaking of teaching,
yes,
Ida, you have about two or maybe over 200,000 students on LinkedIn Learning. So what do you teach?
So I teach about the multi-generational workforce. And I have four courses on LinkedIn Learning about, for example, how a older report can work with a younger manager, right? Or how a younger manager, from their point of view, can work with an older report.
Okay.
I also talk about the steps that we need to take to prepare for a career reinvention over 50. And then I talk about how to implement a multi-generational workforce through diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives.
Okay.
Because in the U.S., interestingly enough, and this gets back to ageism, only something like 8% of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives include age as a diversity factor, which is a shame because a lot of bias is taking place against older workers in American companies. So I'm advocating for people to kind of rethink this and incorporate all of the work that they're doing in DEI and include age.
Okay, so let's say someone out there hearing us right now, they want to know how you help people. Can you highlight your process for students that want to be that want to come to you and be in your orbit?
So I work both one-on-one in a high-ticket, very intense one-on-one program to go through this three-element process. And all of what I do is very much of an inside-to-outside process. I believe that the ability to self-analyze and to reflect is the beginning of the process. I believe that the job that you want is actually already inside you. If you're confused about this, you really need to start with self-reflection and re-examination of all that you've done, all that you want to do. Because the second principle is that in order to create the future, we have to reconcile the past. In mid-career, very likely we have built up a certain amount of baggage, right? These are experiences that we are uncomfortable with. Maybe these are relationships that we have screwed up or mistakes that we've made. And maybe we have some bad feelings or unresolved feelings about our history. It's very important to resolve these feelings and to be able to move forward with a clean slate. Because if you take your baggage along with you, you're going to be dragging it into every job interview, every conversation you have. And you may do very well in the job interview, but they're going to say, you know, there's something about this person. Their answers were good. They seem to be very good at their job, but there's something about them. I'm not sure what it is. There's something that they're not saying, and I don't know what it is, but let's go with someone else. Right? So I think this happens a lot. And it's back to this question of confidence, right? It's not so much about having confidence in the job interview. It's, I think, having acceptance of yourself. If you can come into work and into situations that relate to work with a sense of confidence and authenticity, where you are accepting yourself. Mm-hmm. And who you are, what you've done, including your mistakes.
Yeah,
that, I think, carries a lot of weight. So this is the work that I do with people. I do this one-on-one. I also do this in small group cohorts. And I've also established a community, an online community called the Mid-Career Lab, which is just getting going now at the beginning of middle of 2024, which is designed to be a gathering place for professionals in mid-career to meet with one another, to ask questions, to engage in support for one another, trading stories, and having this dialogue ongoing to help support their careers.
Okay, John, you often talk about hidden job markets. Can you explain what it is to us and how can job candidates tap into this hidden job market?
So the hidden job market is really a way of talking about the job referral process. Okay. And I've seen different statistics on this, whether it's 70%, 80%. Most job openings are posted because they have to be posted. Companies want that out there. They want transparency. They want to be able to pull candidates in from various sources. But very often, jobs are filled through referrals and through internal promotion. So if you realize that you have a less than great chance of breaking through the system, you want to be part of this referral process. Yeah. And that's what my methodology is all about. It's about circumventing the broken hiring process, which is this kind of bulk, chaotic process of filling positions, and go for the relationships, because it's going to make it easier for you to find the right position if you're working to get a personal referral, not to go in cold and kind of pray that you're going to be considered.
Awesome. So as we are wrapping it up, John, I have some set of rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
So what's your number one tip for someone considering a career change?
Start with the process, which is known as the Ikigai process, I-K-I-G-A-I. It's this Japanese concept of purpose, life's purpose. And there are four questions as this process has been interpreted in the West. And the questions are, what do you love to do? What do you do well? What does your world need? And what can you get paid for? So those are four lists that you can make. And it starts the process going. And if you want to take this process forward, I have a worksheet that I give away on my website. So you go to johntarnoff.com. That's johntarnoff.com/4questions, the number 4 questions, no spaces, to get this worksheet. And it'll help you start thinking through this process of change and how you want to direct yourself. It's change, but it's also direction. It's also about narrowing it down so that from this process, you can create your superpower.
Awesome. What's one way you tell mid-life career professional on how to handle ageism in the job market? What's your tip for them?
Yes, I would say don't worry about ageism, because it's out there. You're not going to do anything about it by complaining about it. You're not going to do anything by being afraid of it. And at the same time, you should also not give into it. Do not lie about your age. Do not remove the dates from your resume. Be proud of your experience. Be proud of your age. Because they're going to find out how old you are no matter what, right? You can't hide it. Eventually, they're going to find out. If they are biased against you because of your age, that's their problem. And people will say, well, yeah, but I need a job, and I may have to take a job even if they're ageist. Well, I would like to think that if you focus on your value and on your skills and on your superpower and connect to people who need what you provide, age is not as much of a concern as you might think it is.
Best piece of career advice you've ever received?
God fires you from jobs you're too dumb to quit.
Well, finally, one word to describe the future of work. I know we started with that.
One word to describe the future of work?
Yes.
Expansive.
Expansive. Okay, John. Finally, where can my audience find you?
Yes. I would say the first place to go is to my LinkedIn profile. So you can just search for me, John Tarnoff, on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only John Tarnoff on LinkedIn. You can also find me on my website, johntarnoff.com. And I would also encourage you to check out the Mid-Career Lab, which is midcareerlab, no hyphen, .com. And I look forward to engaging with anyone from your audience who wants to pursue a conversation.
All right. Thank you very much, John. I'm going to leave all your links on my show notes so that my listeners, they can connect with you and continue on in this journey with you. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. We appreciate your wealth of wisdom that you've shared with us. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.